What's our greatest asset? What's our greatest resource? People.
So if you combine your biggest resource, your time, and invest it in your biggest asset, which is people and community, the rewards that you're going to bless upon others and receive upon yourself is immeasurable.
You could be doing things related to your industry, having your engineers volunteer that little bit of time to tutor somebody who's interested, creating the talent of the future that's going to feed your company. And it would be in line and it will be things that nobody else can provide. And it's valuable and it feels good. And at the same time, totally 100% aligned with the future goals of your company.
There's this expression, tikkun olam, repairing the world. And if you see a problem, you be the one to fix it.
Welcome back to the Go, Go, Grow podcast. We're so excited. We're coming on the end of the season here, and we have an incredibly exciting guest. Susie Becker here is the heart of the community in Jacksonville, and she is such a unique guest because she has such a community-centered approach and a perspective on business growth and personal flourishing that is so unique and so purpose-driven. She is the host of Schmooze with Suze, as well as the Ignite Success show on Buzz TV. So two different podcasts that she runs here in Jacksonville. And she enjoys cultivating trusting relationships with leaders, teams, community, nonprofit organizations to deliver outstanding programs and services that have long-lasting positive impact. We're excited to talk to her about building your business by participating in your local community and also about personal resilience and personal growth as you grow your business, about forging creative and impactful partnerships that sustain you and your purpose. Welcome to the show, Susie.
Hi, Dasha. Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Well, we just wanted to dive right in into your personal story and how you got started with your podcast and now the Ignite Success podcast, where you have so much experience, different businesses. What inspired it? Such a great story. Tell us more about it.
Excellent question. So about a year and a half ago in the community I live in, Jacksonville, there was a surge in hate crimes. It was happening all across the United States and in Florida specifically. But here in our town, there was a Florida-Georgia game, which is pretty much tradition, and they had some hate symbols thrown up. And then following that on I-95 overpass, and then there was again on the CSX building, hate symbols. And for someone like me who comes from a background of marginalized community, I felt very activated. So I reached out to different nonprofits and I said, well, what can I do? How can I help? And a number of them said, well, you can make a donation and we'll be very confident that we'll get your message across for the most part the way you love it. And I took that information. I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to make an investment in a message, shouldn't I make that investment in myself first? I mean, who better knows what message I want to drive than myself?
Right.
And then it occurred to me that more so than the message, I am clearly not an expert in everything. So the one thing that I feel completely confident in is having the ability to ask questions, right? Instead of exclamation points coming from a perspective of asking questions. And so I thought, let me bring on experts and I'll ask those hard questions. I'll try to put myself in a position where more of us feel less alone. And so that's how Schmooze with Suze launched. It was not me being the star, but rather the vehicle for transformative change in our community.
And a lot of the people you bring on, the topic often transforms into a topic about people's purpose and values. And so listening to your podcast, you get the sense of what really drives people to do the things they do, whether it's businesses, local community events, specific organizations, or even their personal participation in just activities in their life. For our B2B business owners, you know, this might seem like a far off question. Like, why are we talking about growing your business? Why do we need to talk about values and purpose when it comes to being at the center of your company?
Excellent question. I'm a natural born storyteller. I grew up on stories, right? My grandmothers used to tell me stories. And at the time, I remember listening to these stories of heroism. I didn't recognize when I was little that these Auschwitz survivors were telling me some of the most tragic tales of tenacity, right? Of resilience, of grit. And they were instilling in me the values that it would require. And one of those values is community. It's that we don't know what can happen to us in any moment, but building those support systems of people is an asset, right? What's our greatest asset? What's our greatest resource? People. And when I looked towards what would get me engaged, whether it was in development, whether it was business, whether it was in philanthropy, stories. I'm not doing it because of the what, I'm doing it because of the why and the who, right? So if you tell me that you're passionate about your business and I can hear that and I can feel that, that gives me that confidence to lean into what you're offering to me. And so part of those core values became communication is key and building capacity by sharing our stories, who we are, why we do the things we do, business included, right? When you come to discover somebody is at a job that they hate, is that the account manager that you want to stay with? Or are you always wondering, are they looking for the next gig? In fact, I've asked my hairdresser when she plans to upgrade to a larger home with a bigger mortgage. I want to know she's vested in sticking around.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does.
You had brought out a great point, and that one of our biggest assets as humans, as well as business owners, is people, our communities. Well, if you think about one of our most valuable resources is time. Mm. And time is the one thing, it is not replenishable. So if you combine your biggest resource, your time, and invest it in your biggest asset, which is people and community, the rewards that you're going to bless upon others and receive upon yourself is immeasurable. It's huge impact, personally, professionally, in the community. I mean, it can't be measured, the good that you put out there.
So that's really it. Ripples become waves over time and the benefits become exponential. When you're doing things for the authentic reasons, again, people want to spend more time doing more business with you because they see where you commit that valuable resource time, right? So I'm always asking myself three questions. Time is very valuable. I have two young kids. I'm married. I have a ton of community, not obligations. They're, like you said, blessings. I see them as the opportunity to continue to spread whatever that message is. But also, I met you two. You have a platform that's designed to enhance and to create, again, de-siloing community, capacity building, investing in people as our greatest asset. What does that make me want to do? Tell more people about your podcast. Navigate more people to your business model, mm-hmm. right? So I'm not shy about sharing my values. Does it please God? Is it good for my family? Will it make me happy? Or is it good for my community, depending on context? So if those questions in that order, if the answer to the first is no, I don't need to, no, thank you. This is not a good fit for me. I can use that time. Right. If the second question, the answer is no, is it good for my family? No, I don't need to debate. I'm not at that place in my life. And that's the other thing that I find when you're passionately invested in your business, you and your family understand what's a must do and what's a may do. What are the balls in the air that are glass balls that we have to be very careful with? And what are rubber balls that we can let bounce from time to time, right? Because again, I've built that support system of my faith, in my case, my family and my community.
Yeah, well, one of the things you're talking about is the crystal ball versus rubber ball, which I love that analogy, because in any business that you're building, you know, if you are the entrepreneur, or the owner, you're giving a lot of yourself to that, right? It's not really the same thing as 9 to 5. Like, you, and no business is ever that 9 to 5. It is something much more akin to like raising a family, because the amount of investment, it's your own creation, your ideas. Now you have people depending on you, you have this heightened sense of responsibility, but like anything, it's very likely to have ups and downs. And mm-hmm. also because of the personal nature of being an owner of a business, the ups and downs in the business can oftentimes translate to serious challenges for the family, as well as ups and downs in the family translating to you being challenged as a leader in your business and bringing that back and forth, right? It's much harder to have that separation. Mm-hmm. Work-life balance when you're an entrepreneur, it's a very different concept because you learn more from the downs and the ups, but both can be disruptive. And even the ups can be very like draining in their own way. Being really successful and on the upswing and growing your business is an energy sucking experience.
Did you ever see that meme? Sorry to cut you off, but that's the New Yorker in me because you reminded me. There's this meme of this girl that's struggling like on this computer and the underlying voice is, I wish to be a girl boss, but I think I wish too hard.
Yes, exactly. So you could be hanging on to your business.
Excellent. You're making a great point. Okay. So at the onset of Schmooze with Suze, right? This great idea, this podcast, right? I'm doing this not for the income because I make $0. This was an investment in myself. Initially, okay. If I'm going to donate that money, if I'm going to invest that money, if I'm going to, whatever I'm going to do, let me do it strategically. So season one, I was reaching out to guests and I wanted to make sure that they were important enough for me to want to listen to, because I've said before that a podcast to me is very personal. It is a creative baby. It was a baby for me and I have two kids already. So I was going to be very careful with the time, talent and treasure that I was going to invest in this project. So at first it was me asking people if they would be on my show. But then when the show started to come out and it was surprisingly amazing, I'm not even just tooting my own horn. It's not because I'm so great. It's because my guests are unbelievable.
The show is fabulous.
Thank you.
If you have not watched, but subscribed to
Schmooze with Suze.
I can't.
Right?
Do that.
It used to be Schmoozin' with Susan, but I was like, only if I get indicted should you call me Susan. So Schmooze with Suze.
So subscribe to Schmooze with Suze.
Yes.
And enjoy.
And it's about culture, values, and global citizenship. But that first season at the beginning, I was asking, after I started asking, there were stakeholders and thought leaders that were reaching out to me through their PR and marketing saying, hey, can we get some space on your show? Because podcasting is the new media model. We don't trust the news. We don't feel confident in our local coverage, right? We're not comfortable with them taking thoughts out of context. You do a sit down. You don't edit it. It's 26 minutes of wanting to understand what my personal impact, my personal story to public impact is. Can I get a shot? Okay, so now I had too many people and it was costing me money, right? Because I'm paying for this. So everybody wants to do this. Okay, so I'm saying yes to everybody. A girl bossed my way too hard. Mm-hmm. So then I had to, right? Because originally I was going to do one every Friday. I thought it was going to be a struggle. Now I had too many and I had to hold off because I had too many in my evergreen folder. That's a good problem to have, right? Okay. So I decided we're going to make it episodic and seasonal. That solved that problem. I became strategic. I don't have to commit. This is my show. I could do whatever I want with it. I want to do every week. I'll do every week. I don't want to do it. I won't do it. I did 13 episodes a season. I decided we're going to do season two and I'll create for each one an arc. Right? Building the plane as I'm flying it, giving myself permission to do everything that goes against the model. No 5-year business plan, no strategic development, no counsel with anyone outside of my own head. In fact, as close as I came to a board meeting was in front of a mirror. That was me and myself. And sometimes we brought like my phone in for a camera and it was myself and I. After those three successful seasons, October 7th was a very pivotal moment in my life personally. I'm Israeli and my mom was in Israel at the time. And I had these episodes in my evergreen folder that were uplifting and hopeful and they were all good. And they were everything that we were on the trajectory to be, but I didn't expect the world to implode. And I didn't expect my children to ask hard questions about racism and anti-Semitism. And so now when I got in front of a microphone and I listened back to my first recording after that date, it was not the same girl from August or September.
It's the way the U.S. and the world felt on September 12th. It was another September 11th.
For me, it was, you know, and again, understanding that if people are listening to my voice in their ear, and in those moments, I'm giving you words of optimism and hope and connection and community and compassion. I wasn't feeling anything like that in that moment, and I couldn't fake it. My brand, my value is authenticity. So I had to decide what I was going to do. And it was really hard to say, but I decided to stop the podcast before season four started. And I had to come up with another idea. And so I had to pivot again. And this time it was, how do I consult people who are ready to talk? How do I help people with their strategic development? What I never did, I now have the tools to offer other people. So I took my highs and I see those as an opportunity to recalibrate. I take my lows and I see them as an opportunity to recalibrate.
Let me ask you, Susie, October 7th was so impactful to so many people. But one thing that I've known about the Israeli people, the people of the Jewish faith around the world, you're not going to keep a good man or good woman down. You are some of the most resilient people that have ever walked the face of this earth. So can we talk a little bit about resiliency?
Yeah, for sure.
So what we've talked about personally and what you have on one of your episodes about having your purpose and finding that resiliency inside you. And it sounds like what you drew upon to kind of pivot your podcast on September 8th. Can you kind of walk us through that? And what you dug down into to say, you know what, this is building over that scar tissue.
That's a good point. I think for any entrepreneur, they can say the same thing. My dad was a business owner, and I remember I wanted to work with my dad. I interned for him when I was 16, and I would come into the office, and this is back in the 1900s, when things were going from paper to computer, and they had this skill called data entry. Now it's not called data entry. It's called just do your job because everything is instantly into the computer. But in the olden days, we had to transport the stuff from cards that people had written with pen on ink to the computers. And so every so often I would walk into my dad's office, and because I was working hourly, I was only working during my school breaks. And I was always working like when we had vacation, because I wanted to earn a couple bucks, right? It was like $10 an hour or something. So I would get in early and I would want to stay as long as I could. And my dad, my ride, would be bored. He would sit at the desk in the office with his head in his hands. And I would say like, oh my God, when I grow up, I want to be you. He said, oh yeah, what do you think you should make if you're going to be me? I said, I don't know, like $500 a week. Obviously, I have no concept of what a salary for an executive director is, but I say to myself, like $500 a week. He says, that's great. But now I want you to figure out how you're going to pay everybody else first and all of the bills. And if you have the money left for yourself last, that's what you're going to do. That's what resilience is. Resilience is looking at the world around you and recognizing two things. I have to put my own mask on first before I secure the mask of the person next to me. And am I okay to now offer assistance? Or should I be reaching out for someone else and ask them to throw a life preserver, right? Mm-hmm. So the resilience part is knowing that I have to get through the other side, right? I have a history of people who have been telling me the stories. And in those stories, not just the people that raised me, but then we think of who we want to model and who we want to embody, who we want to admire, right? Is it someone who has those ideas where I'm going to get through this, right? You can't go over it, can't go under it. You gotta go. The song is always in my head, right?
I hadn't thought about that in years.
Because you have to go through it.
It's gonna be in your head.
And now it's gonna be in your head. But that's really a lot of it is that I've learned that the resilience comes with facing what's going on, right? Because a lot of it is that you ignore it and you think it'll go away. Mm-hmm. The world will get better, the people will be nicer, my business will start to take off. Well, nobody cares about you more than you do, right? Yeah, so if you're not going to put that effort into your own business, I can tell you how great I think I am. But honestly, when I wasn't podcasting, when I wasn't putting out an episode a week, I started to worry and I said, okay, so how can I keep myself relevant? I didn't leave my roles in the community. I kept going out there in that philanthropic way. One, what you said, October 8th, I realized that who I am is part of my values and part of my brand. Mm-hmm. I am a survivor. I come from survivors. We are going to show that despite and in spite of, we believe in peace. We believe in unity. We care about the Palestinian community and the Palestinian people. We are hopeful that this is going to end. We believe that no one will be left behind and that they will bring everyone home. We really do believe those things. And so when I went back out there and I re-engaged with my guests from season 1, 2, and 3 to do two things. One, see where they are, right? Mm-hmm. Follow up with your guests, see if they're holding up their end of the bargain. You've brought them on to pick their brain. What happens if it turns out a year from now you're a loser? I want to delete that episode and pretend I never met you. But I was very lucky that that didn't happen. Turned out that the guests I had had done what they said, and then they surpassed what they promised. So I could now re-show that episode with an update, right? I'm repurposing my own assets. The same part was me using who my brand is, Schmooze with Suze, and schmoozing in public, yeah. Being open to having those conversations because we can't heal what we don't feel. So I had to be open to take some really hard criticism and abuse and to lose some friends and to expand community development by being brave enough to say this is devastating for everyone.
So one thing I want to kind of pull out from some of the things you're saying, because you're saying a lot of different things, and I want to connect it with a previous. So in our first episode, actually, with Marius Dobrin, we talk about peer communities and peer-to-peer mentorship between CEOs, between entrepreneurs. And we talk about it in the context of you're going to learn from other people. You're going to be able to share, like, here's what failed for me. Here's what worked for me. But this thought of your network, that peer-to-peer network, if you have real, true relationships with, you know, one day you're having the crisis, some other day, somebody else is having that crisis. And if you have a community of people, not just, you know, obviously in a business, you have employees as well, and you have your suppliers, and those people can also be those close friends, but your community can also include unrelated business owners who are just peers that you cultivate that relationship for the sake of being there for each other, being able to check in with them and say, how are you doing during this time?
Yes.
And then being able to check on you to see how you're doing, like neighbors, like that neighborly feeling, but business neighbors, right?
It takes a village.
And I love that because I think a lot of people focus on that more tangible benefit. If you're running your business for a couple of years, something in life or business is going to, there's going to be a moment just because life happens. And if when you're the business owner, like if you stop, your business stops, right? Mm-hmm. And so how do you ensure that when that happens, you know, your business doesn't stop and you have some support? And I just love what you said, like you were able to, the community you built, you were able to reach back out to them. And during a time when people needed support, you were reaching out with support and they were reaching back out mm-hmm. with support to you. And so now a crisis that could be alienating and lonely and just creating that chaos and ambiguity is creating community and pulling people together around the shared mission again, so that together you can heal and then go back into the world with that readiness.
Yes.
Readiness to address. And Michelle and I were just talking about this. You know, one of the things that you see happen during crisis, and sometimes there's crises that affect individual groups of people, and sometimes there's crises that like affect everybody equally across the board. Mm-hmm. But when crisis hits, your people are in fight or flight, right? People are like, either I like go react really antagonistically, like people get like hyped up and they're like, I'm going to fight somebody, right? Or they're like, pause, stop, shovel the same, you know, do the same thing I've been doing. Don't explore, don't take risks, and just do it harder. Like head under the pillows. I don't want to know what's going on. Or they're like, they're ignoring it. Like you said, you know, the changes come around, like your business isn't working or something isn't working. And you're like, I'm just going to ignore it, keep doing the thing I'm doing. And so in the times of crisis, if you are a person who is bringing peace, you're bringing community, you're bringing action, just the ability to take action and make decisions in times of crisis is not found across everybody. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people shut down and they need somebody to be like, I'm going to grab your hand. We're going to get out of this together. I will take some decisions right now. And so if you're a person who has that community, you're reaching out to the community and you're providing support, you're already taking action and driving things when many people are paralyzed and they don't know what to do. You're immediately leading and you're already providing value, which, you know, when we talk about business structures and business marketing plans, but at the heart of every business and every business owner is the value that they're trying to provide to the world. And so that community, being a business community or being a philanthropic community or your neighborhood community, if you are the person who has that community action, community reaching out mentality, then you are going to be raising not just yourself and taking actions, but a lot of people are going to come to rely on you and they're going to be there for you also. When
you're cultivating and curating global citizenship. And when you do that, it grows exponentially. You know, and when you talked about the business development side of it, you're absolutely correct. How many touch points do we say that it takes before someone responds to your marketing ad, right? It takes a couple of touch points, I think 6 to 10. But when people see your face in person, right, that first impression, they never forget that. And when you've left them feeling better than you found them, they're going to gravitate and they're going to circle back and look for you, whether it's in the next 5 minutes, they've social media requested you and they've LinkedIn requested you and they've looked at what you have going on, or they've listened to your podcast episodes and then recommended to other people to listen to them.
Right.
It's being engaged and staying engaged. And exactly what you said, Dasha, it's noticing those people who aren't engaged for a while and caring enough to ask why not, right? We used to say it takes a village, and I imagine that it was a geographic village, that it was a space, but it's not, it's spiritual. Sometimes it's the people who show up for you and they offer to help you in person with doing the things. But one of the things that you're mentioning is when you're struggling and you need to pause and take a step back, it's understanding that village is also the understanding that you need that space and they're still there to support you and wait for you to be ready to show back up and still have confidence that you're going to be the same you they've always come to know, love, and trust.
Yeah. So let me ask you, Susie, when we first met you, it's been a short while. One of the things that we talked about in that first conversation was how you first started getting so involved with communities, and how you chose which ones to get involved with and how it kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah.
So if one of our listeners are thinking, okay, you know what, I'm not really involved in any communities, and you know, I'm a business owner, I'm pretty busy, I don't have a lot of bandwidth. How would you recommend that they start that? Okay, giving to maybe in the future get, but something that aligns with their values.
Such a great question. Okay, so philanthropy. Right. People think of that and it sounds very lofty, very heavy. And business owners who want to be philanthropists, they sometimes feel overwhelmed because they imagine it's someone of a certain wealth status or someone of a certain age or a certain gravitas, but it's not. Philanthropy is any time, talent, or treasure that you contribute to your community. So for a lot of people, I would say, what makes your heart tick? Right? What makes you happy? Or where I come from, there's this expression, tikkun olam, repairing the world, right? And if, you know, if you see a problem, you be the one to fix it. don't like just leave a note for the super that he should come and take care of it. If you have the ability to do that. So it started off very grassroots. I would find an organization. I'll give an example locally is JFCS, Jewish Family Community Services. They're one of the largest foster care and adoption agencies in the 4 or 5 counties in this area, and they provide immense services. So it started off with time. I donated my time. I wanted to see with my own eyes, what are you doing? What is your structure like? Do you value my dollars that I'm going to if I do donate to you? Are you going to take my $1 and stretch it? Or do you have 100 people working in the office and you're making copies all the time and you're hosting parties and fundraisers? That doesn't align with my values. So once I was in this space, I could see what kind of people work there. After time came talent, right? I have a business. I can promote what you do. So I offered my services to them for free, whether it was marketing and advertising. Let me come and take on a project for you as a co-chair. Usually a co-chair is someone who comes in and just puts their name on the invitation and doesn't really have to do much. But I took the ownership of contributing more than just that. I'll go out and hustle for raffle prizes. I will go out and ask people to buy tickets. I will even go and ask other businesses if they would be willing to sponsor. Okay. Still didn't cost me any money out of my pocket. At the point that I felt so comfortable and I wanted to be a business sponsor, I am not a big business. I am a tiny little nobody from no place who's like paycheck to paycheck. I went to them and I said, look, you have an annual event upcoming and I really want to get a ticket. And the ticket is expensive. It's like $150. So for me and my husband, that's $300. But I see I could be a sponsor at an $1,000 level. Would it be possible to break it up into monthly payments? And they said, of course. Nobody had asked.
I never would have thought of that.
I just thought I wanted to do as much as I can. But once I discovered the monthly payments, okay, because once I went to the treasure part, I freed up my time that went to the next organization. I said, you know what? I really like what you do, City Year Jax. I love your mission. Would you come on and I can offer you some time in volunteerism and in interviewing you to help get your message out and help promote you? My talent in trying to sell tickets for your block party that's coming. My treasure now, do you take it monthly? Right? So whereas some people were asking for $1,000 at once, I can't do that. And I certainly can't do that multiple times a year. But once I realized that they could break that up to monthly for $100 a month, I'm a philanthropist of 4 nonprofits. And so every time someone goes to their event or goes into their building, they see my logo as a sponsor. And so when they're thinking of who do I want to talk to? Who do I want to interview with? Who do I want to tell about my upcoming event, I want to schmooze with Susan, reaching out to her first because she and I share values.
That's incredible.
It's so beautiful and so creative.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that you hit on right away is like philanthropy, big word. People think, you know, either I'm a platinum level sponsor of everything or like, what's the point? But the framework, first of all, talent, treasure, and time. So break that down.
Time, the time that you donate, that you volunteer, whether it's in the food pantry or in the clothing closet, or it's picking up and delivering food to elderly Holocaust survivors in the area, or V for Victory. They give Legos to every cancer warrior who has a visit or an appointment with any medical issue, right? Yeah. So they're giving out hundreds of dollars and thousands of dollars worth of Lego. So even delivering that stuff from one place to another, or Super Bowl Sunday, my husband's team, the Ravens, my son's team, didn't make it to the Super Bowl. That freed up my day. That meant that when they had a big Super Bowl party, I could volunteer at the event to sell tickets, right? To sell those squares. Yeah. They generated maybe $10,000 extra income because I was able to stand there. They had other volunteers also. So time is number one. Talent, what does your business do? What can you do in a creative way to offer your business services to other philanthropies? So for example, most people in the marketing world have a talent that most nonprofits sorely lack. They don't have someone to do those clips, those videos, those Canvas. They've been you know, grassroots for years and decades, probably. And every time somebody makes a donation, every nonprofit, every philanthropy that's of value that I know struggles and they don't want to give it to advertising and marketing. And I agree with them. They want to give it to people and for resources. So if you're in any business, whether it's you personally that can do it, or you have a staff member in your office who's on the salary anyway, pro bono that shit. You give that away, you know, once a month, or in the case of V for Victory, they are so fantastic that they only allow their business partners. And it doesn't matter if you're a lawn care company or a tire company or any restaurant, they want you to donate one thing, one time to one family. Okay. So what does that mean? I'm a family with a cancer warrior, and in the cases of a car breakdown, the amount of that repair could totally break the bank for a family that's in a medical crisis, right? There's a list of mechanics here in Jacksonville who have volunteered to offer their services for not for free. V for Victory pays them to give that service at a reduced rate to that family. And what happens? Those businesses call V for Victory and they go, please, can we do more than one a month? Please, can we? And V for Victory tells them, we value you so much as community members. No, because you would do it until it hurt. Think about that. So that's your talent. And then treasure is what happens after you've outgrown your talent and time, because you always want to free up more time to give to who? More people or organizations or philanthropies that need you. The more you're there, the more you're learning, the more you're curating experiences, the more you're gaining world knowledge, the more you're gaining education, the more you become the activator in all of those circles. Because let's not kid ourselves. A village, a community, a city is a series of Venn diagrams. And what's our greatest asset? People. Mm-hmm. We want to move them from circle to circle. And we hope that they want to be a meaningful contributing part of every circle. So even if you're not a business member and you're potentially someone who can be a client in the future or an employee in the future, but the first thing is, as someone who cares about where I'm raising my kids, where I'm growing my business, where I'm investing, I want to make sure that everyone is taken care of to the best of our community's ability. So instead of looking for problems, look for solutions. And if you can't find the solution, be the solution.
I love that framework, the time, treasure, and talent. I love it so much because it's so expansive. You can come up with so many creative ways to give with your business. You could be a small business and you could come up with something that is value added that you have that's unique. And it's not necessarily like this huge taxing crazy thing that you're now suddenly no longer doing business. You can find things in your local community. You can find things in a more global community, so based on values. You can also find things in your industry. Like, you know, if you're in space satellite industry, like, hey, education in engineering is a huge, you know, we're always talking about how we need people to succeed more in math, how we don't have enough girls in math and sciences, how certain communities don't have great like lab spaces. You know, you could be doing things related to your industry, having your, you know, engineers like volunteer that little bit of time to tutor somebody who's interested, creating the talent of the future that's going to feed your company. And it would be in line and it will be things that nobody else can provide. And it's valuable and it feels good. And at the same time, totally 100% aligned with the future goals of your company.
Yeah.
And there's so many things like that. I know that, Michelle, you go ahead.
Well, there's always going to be that subset of people that are like, you know what? My time is so precious. And, you know, I can't think of any talents that I can give. And, you know, well, what's in it for me? You know, where's that with them?
With them.
Yes. So think about this. Who benefited you? What organizations benefited you when you were coming up? Did you have a strong leadership person in your life? Did you benefit from that? Okay, be that person for someone else. Did you have a mentor or somebody who could help when you were starting your business, whether it was a formal relationship or not? be that person for someone else. Either you join a mentorship program, whether it's a casual networking group, maybe you join something a little bit more formal. There are, if you go to meetup.com, there are thousands of organizations. Now, there it may not be a nonprofit, it may be a nonprofit, but if you have to like dip your toe in the water and just help someone, that's a start. And then look at your Chamber of Commerce. That's going to be a good start. If you just look for business organizations in your community, if you have a passion, animal welfare, veterans, any sort of medical, whether it's cancer survivors, I don't call them anything but survivors. I love the warriors. But everyone is a cancer survivor. Diabetes. If you've been touched or if your family's been touched by a certain disability or disease and you want to support that community, there's always something you can do for that community. You may think, oh, well, I don't have a medical degree.
Michelle, there are some people that for every problem, they find two solutions, right? They find the solution, they find a contingency plan.
Yes.
And there are some people who for every solution will find two problems. It's not my job to change their mind, right? We're here. Yeah. You're here. Dasha's here. You're offering solutions to spoon feed to people information that they didn't have before. Exactly what you said. Does it have to be a nonprofit? Does it have to be a philanthropy specifically? Absolutely not. You know what? You could go volunteer. Exactly what you said, Dasha. That was such a great point. How about all those people in the science or the STEAM industry who could be using their time at the local museums? Right. Oh. All you have to do is get background checked and fingerprinted, and you could be volunteering to work with STEAM programs. James Weldon Johnson Park downtown does these free programs that you can volunteer with the city of Jacksonville to become engaged. People will find what they want to, but this is the point. The point is that are you interested in, and what you said is so important. Mentorship means so many things, right? So mentorship to me has come to mean that vertical mentorship of the people who know more, who are experts in their field, who can help me in the direction that I'm heading in, right? So I want to keep creating those relationships, the ones above me who can help me. But I also want the people who I can give my hand to help up, because I want to be able to give away that information that I've learned. What do you have to scrounge around if I can just package it and give it to you nicely? I know a lot of people feel like that becomes competition. I don't believe in competition. I believe that the rising tide lifts all ships and cream will rise to the top. Somebody will lazy out inevitably. But the second part of mentorship is that horizontal, those peer mentors that you exactly explained, that they see the problems or they can confer with the strategies. It becomes like a brain trust. Right? You can safely, and that's really it. I think when you're an entrepreneur, when you're a business owner and all of that responsibility falls on you, admission of failure is terrifying. So you never really say it. And so you kind of let it go until, you know, you've gone as far as you can. You're stretched to the point where you feel anxious and nauseous all the time. And then it, like you start at the top of the show, when it affects your friends and your family. I firmly believe that you cannot have your family life and your professional life in chaos at the same time. You're just going to have to pick who you want to rescue in that moment. That's really it. When you're a sole entrepreneur, business owner, and the primary breadwinner on top of that, and that's the case for some business owners and entrepreneurs, they're also the primary breadwinner. And when things get too chaotic, you have to think, how am I going to feed my family? You have to be able to step away from that chaos and say, okay, I have to focus on what's within my control. Other people's personalities are not within my control. Same thing with peers and mentorship. Something that started off great could change over time. It's okay to let things go. Something that was a working relationship has sort of gone into separate directions because the world changed, right? In the 1900s, I told you I was in data entry. There's no such thing anymore.
Yeah. And we are living in a time of extraordinary fast pace of change, right? We look back in history and we almost like can empathize with the people of the, you know, 1300s who probably like the biggest thing that changed over the course of a year is like a few travelers and that big market that came through and like the fields produce less than before, right? We're like, every 3 years right now, we have some massive technological upheaval. We have a connected world. People don't live in the same places. They're changing themselves. Like the upheaval and the change adoption is huge. And so I think it's very important to recognize a change and recognize that it's okay that things are changing and be able to adjust to the flow. And I had some clients who are recently going through a pivot in their company. And one of the things I told them is like, look, a pivot is never like a one and done thing. Oh, okay. Yesterday we were going that direction. Right. Now we throw all the plans out the window. Like there is this emotional component to it too, which is, yeah, when things are changing, like, and even if you've already figured out the new direction, like a piece of you is still stuck going in the other direction. It's still attached to all the work that already been completed. And you have to be like, okay, we're going to like grieve the fact that the things we had imagined over in this direction, we are no longer going to be able to do. We're not doing that anymore. Like calm yourself, like totally like let go emotionally
and recalibrate,
like make peace with yourself about that. And then make peace with the people who maybe also were going in that direction with you so that they can also change direction, but ultimately change direction, because that's also growth and development is occasionally shedding and moving into a new direction as the world and the circumstances demand.
Yeah, I think that's the difference though. All right, maybe I'm dating myself again, but it's come back into fashion. Friends, right? The show Friends.
Pivot,
right? Every time I hear people say the word pivot, and I don't know when they started introducing this in the business world, pivot, but I've never said pivot because I don't pivot. I recalibrate. What's the difference? Great question, Suze. Pivot is very sudden and instant. And I am not built for sudden and instant, right? I am not four-wheel drive. I need to recalibrate. That means that I need a level, right? And I need multiple. So if you've ever seen me hang a picture on my wall, I never sort of measure. I eyeball everything. And then if I don't like it, after I like bang the hole in, I take it out and I bang another hole in. And I just keep doing it until I find. And by the way, it's always in the same sort of area so I can cover the hole with the picture at the end. Right? That's how I look at my business life. Not in my personal life, because that's different with kids, with spouses, with siblings, with parents, with family members, with friends even. You have to be more sensitive. With my work, I can recalibrate. I can bang all the holes I want in the wall because ultimately it's me that knows where I'm putting the picture to cover those holes. So I can be as ugly and messy in my recalibration as I want. The thing is exactly what you said. Give yourself the permission to say, crap, that could have been better and I'll make it better the next time. And it's okay to scrap. I have like 6 episodes that are sitting in an evergreen folder that will never air. And they're like, okay, they're not bad, but they weren't that great. And the content wasn't that meaningful that I was like, yeah, the world can't live without this. Maybe the time will come, which is why I don't delete things, that information will come back. Maybe that project that you worked on, don't throw it in the garbage, set it to the side. That might be the genesis of a whole different project somewhere in the future. Don't be mad at yourself for what you didn't do. Be proud of yourself for doing and then being able to do it differently.
Well, Susie, I can guarantee you this episode will air and it will air proudly. And I'm sure it will be repeated not only by us watching it multiple times, but our audience as well. And I think it's probably a pretty fair bet that since this is towards the end of our season, you'll probably be a return guest as well.
I hope so.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode on how to get involved in your community and stay resilient with Susie Becker. If you got value out of this episode and you know somebody else who's going to be finding this information valuable, please send it along to them. Share it personally, because this type of content is oftentimes more personal, more timely for a specific moment in time. And of course, like, share, subscribe in general. Tune in for our next office hours announced on our LinkedIn page, as well as on our website, which is now up and running for a couple weeks now, the Go, Go, Grow Show. GoGoGrowShow.com.
Dasha, I would also like to put together a list of resources on our show notes. When we were talking about all the wonderful organizations and ways to get involved, it got me thinking from some of the examples Susie gave. I would like to put together a list of resources for our listeners about different organizations.
We will have those in the show notes.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you.
Thank you.